Hey everyone, this is Sean Reedy of Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast. Thanks for listening. You're about to hear an interview that I just did with Rick Crane of 70sTV.com about his Memphis DVD collection and our shared love of old school Memphis wrestling. Again, that's 70s-tv.com. If you enjoy what you hear from me, you can hear more from us. We just had our third episode where Al and I talked about the Superstar Shakeup and all sorts of interesting things that happened there. And you can hear me rant like a crazy person about how excited I am about SmackDown moving forward. And then we'll be back later in the week previewing the greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia. But right now, let's go ahead and get to that interview. Thanks. Okay, belt time, and we're ready to go. Our referee is Jerry Calhoun. Our participants, the host, Sean Reedy. No, I'm sorry. I just had to do that once as a tribute to the great Lance Russell. Our guest today, the very first guest ever on Sean and Al's Wrestling Podcast. I'm so thrilled and grateful that he came to talk with us today. The owner of 70sTV.com, where you can find the absolute best DVDs on Memphis wrestling. I'm obsessed with Memphis, as you're going to find out as we do this podcast over time. And it's through this site that has the best like season set DVDs and everything. But Rick, instead of me talking about it, why don't you go ahead and just tell everybody about what you have available at your site?
Yeah, my site, it's been there for a couple of years, but the thing that I was focused on is, you know, in the beginning you would find so many Memphis tapes and they'd be like third generation VHS that was really hard to watch. And so over the years of collecting, I've got like five versions of like every show of Memphis wrestling, and I would buy a bunch of equipment, which I have, and start picking through and piecing the better audio piece into the clip and trying to improve the quality and fix it up as best I could. So that's what you'll see in the DVDs is the best quality, best audio you can find. And unfortunately, a lot of it's already been thrown up on YouTube, but you're still not going to have the quality you're going to have on a DVD, which you can get from me. But definitely, I've got the master tapes, which is a story to tell. I've got the bloopers, which actually came from David Dixon's fan. And I've got the season sets, which is all you'd want to have. I've got most of the years represented there.
Yeah. So, absolutely. You know, on one hand, I feel kind of embarrassed as a wrestling fan that I was so negligent for so long and didn't get into Memphis Wrestling TV, because it is, in my opinion, the greatest wrestling TV show of all time. But on the other hand, I'm kind of glad that I did wait until when I got into it, all of your stuff was available, and it's so easy now. I'm telling you, people, if you haven't watched Memphis, like, you can start with 1979. That's the first season set that you have. And it's the most addicting thing. You'll find yourself just binge watching these DVDs episode by episode, going all the way. I think you go all the way to 1995 on your website. And right. It's fantastic. So let's talk about you a little bit, because there's a lot I don't know about your path as a fan and how you became such an expert. First off, what are your first memories of watching Memphis wrestling as a kid and becoming exposed to that?
Well, I grew up in Bartlett, Tennessee, which is in Memphis, and I had a friend that lived three doors down from me, and we used to get up on Saturday mornings, come over and stuff our faces with sugar crap, and we'd watch cartoons. So that was our Saturday, and then one Saturday, right after Land of the Lost at 11 o'clock, came, you know, the wrestling show, and we'd never watched it before. I don't know who got him into it, but he said, I got to watch wrestling. And I was like, what are we going to watch that for? He's like, no, it's cool. We need to watch it. And I said, I don't want to watch a bunch of, you know, fat, sweaty guys pretending to hit each other. I was like, I don't want to watch that. He's like, no, man, you got to watch it. And at the time, you know, I'm like 10, he's 8 years old. So we started watching it, and I was like, But then the person that kind of brought this around to me was Jerry Lawler, and I think at the time it must have been 75, 76, but he'd already had the heel thing going. And he came across as, I don't know, he walked you through it. he appealed to you, and he had the banana nose thing on the announcer, Lance Russell.
The great Lance
Russell. That was, yeah, he was funny. And slowly, the thing I started to realize, it's just like with Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, all these teams, even today, and I don't know which one to mention, maybe like Seinfeld and Kramer, you've got to have the straight man, then you've got to have the guy that's over the top. So Lance Russell would be the straight man, and he would kind of say everything the audience was thinking, and he'd give reactions, and then, you know, he would just, he'd sell you everything, and it would be somehow packaged so well, not to mention the fact that Lance was definitely Southern and I was Southern. So it all, you know, fit in. The thing that's shocking to remember about TV back then, when you only had four channels available to you, I mean, you had one shot to watch these shows and that was it. With Memphis, since it was live, there was no repeat. And so, you know, it made it even more feverish that you had to make sure you didn't miss it. So we were glued to the TV every Saturday. It's like, oh, we got to be here right at 11. We can't miss anything. And so, yeah, I started watching it, and the Dundee feud is what really got me into it, because they just had such chemistry together. And Lawler, every week they had something new happening. So, yeah, I was into it until, unfortunately, my family moved away from Memphis in 79. And well, the thing, maybe I still didn't realize I don't like wrestling, but I'm not a fan of it. But these guys, you had Valiant, you had LeDuc, you had Dundee, you had Lawler, a couple of other people that escaped my mind at the moment, but those were the main ones. And not to mention just Lance and Dave was our, you know, I watched him every night on the news, and it was our weatherman. It just was all a family kind of thing, and it all felt familiar. So, yeah, when we moved away from 79, a big part of me missing Memphis was missing the Saturday wrestling show. So when I found out we moved to Alabama and cable had just come out, and when I found out there was Georgia Championship Wrestling, I was like, oh, great. I can watch wrestling. And I didn't know what to expect. You know, I thought, well, sure, Lawler's not going to be on there. There's not going to be Lance Russell. I knew that. But when I watched it, I was just so disappointed. Nothing, I don't mean to say anything negative about anybody, but the Gordon Solie thing just totally was such a contrast to Lance Russell's approach. And I didn't like it. And I could fall asleep. They had some great guys on Georgia Championship Wrestling, but for me, I realized, yeah, I don't like wrestling, and without the talent that they had in Memphis and the way they sold it to me, I was like, yeah, I couldn't watch it. So
the funny thing to me is that actually, from like all the territories I've watched, I'd probably say Georgia was the second best.
Really,
I should show you some like 1979 New York TV, and you'll really appreciate Memphis and Georgia and things like that. Yeah, but no, that is how special the Memphis TV show was. I've said it a million times, you know, you watch this stuff from Memphis from 79, they were doing stuff that didn't catch up in the mainstream until like 95-96, once you got Raw and Nitro. It wasn't until like 15 years later that other promotions we're doing TV as exciting and live and full of angles and just excitement and brawling and chaos and all those things like that. So, yeah, that's interesting. So you got into it around 75 through 79. So you got to see a lot of stuff that does not exist on tape and that I desperately wish I could see, but it just doesn't exist, right? So you got to see that whole Dundee feud. When Jerry Jarrett split away and formed his own company and went over to Channel 5, I think the first 2 years were primarily built around Lawler against Dundee and then Lawler against Jimmy Valiant, right?
Yep, that's it. I remember watching, we watched Channel 13, and all I remember is all of a sudden they said, you know, we're switching it to Channel 5. And then we just started watching Channel 5. I did not even know until years later that Nick Gulas kept running the show on 13 for, I think, a few weeks, and then he got dropped. But, yeah, all of a sudden these different guys were here. I was like, where's Lance and Dave? And they came on a few weeks after that.
Do you remember like the Lawler Dundee feud? I know the famous thing was they went back and forth for weeks where they put like their cars at stake, and then eventually Bill Dundee's like wife's hair was at stake. And yeah, you were watching all that stuff live when it happened.
Yeah, I was. And that's the thing I was going to say about Georgia and Memphis. There was a subtlety that Jerry Lawler had that I never seen really since, definitely before. And it was that thing that I think I was missing from Georgia. You know, they and Jarrett talked about this once, how you would have Dundee and Lawler as a team. And then all of a sudden, you know, you would get, there'd be a trophy or one guy would get a title shot. And then the other guy, Lawler, would be so subtle about, well, why does he get a shot? I mean, that's, you know, I've had the Southern belt longer than Dundee. I'm not sure why he gets one. And then slowly Lawler starts being a little more, you know, unhappy towards Lance. He's not as jovial and happy to see Lance. And it's just over a couple of weeks, you'd see this and you start talking about it. I would with Brian. It's like, damn, what's up with Jerry? He didn't seem happy this show. What's going on? And it was, that was part of the realism, you know, and the drama that would unfold instead of just a guy ranting about beating a guy.
No, that's an awesome point that I wasn't even planning on talking about, but everybody thinks of Memphis and they think of the crazy angles and the big brawls and the concession stand brawl, but there was also a subtlety to their storytelling, especially in that studio environment where someone would just say something and they wouldn't yell it, you know, it'd just be like a little comment and Lance Russell would just have like a little reaction. I think the first TV show that's actually available is something from like 1978, and there's a segment with Lawler and Dundee and Valiant all out there, and it's like this 10-minute thing where they start out as friends, but then they like kind of subtly start arguing, and by the end of it there's all this tension. And Memphis would do that. It was like kind of nuanced storytelling by the standards of pro wrestling, where they would do that kind of subtle stuff, and Lance was the perfect guy to sell all of it.
Yeah, I got to tell you, that clip is one of my favorites of all time, because you're right, that illustrates the point so well. And if you watch in particular Lance and Jerry Lawler, when Valiant's doing his thing and he's all in everybody's face and he wants to be pulled into the main event, I swear, if you watch Lawler and Lance, it seems so genuine. They little looks between each other, they look down, look uncomfortable. And they're like trying to get this back on track. And then you can see when Lawler finally starts to crack and he's like, wow, okay, this guy's not following my lead. You're not going to be pulled into the main event, you know, and Jim Valiant just keeps going on and on. And then he's insulting him. And then he's like, okay, I'm going for it. And then when it starts to get to be, you know, a verbal argument, there comes Jerry Jarrett and he brings wrestlers out to like, okay, let's try to get some, you know, order back in here, and they're getting ready to pull them apart and say, let's go to a commercial. And Lance was always great at that. After the slap happens, he's like, oh man, let's go to a commercial. I mean, it was great.
Oh, it's great stuff. And no other promotion that I found was doing anything remotely close to stuff like that, that level of storytelling. Which is just, again, another tribute to Memphis. So you move away in 79. So you actually weren't there for like the crazy boom that everybody remembers with the Fabs and Lawler and Dutch and Idol and the Road Warriors and Bockwinkel. So you and I have known each other for a while now, and I don't really know the story. How does it come to be that you become this huge collector of Memphis wrestling tapes, probably the biggest collector out there?
Well, I was desperate to find, you know, back then all we had was the VHS recorders, and I couldn't find, unfortunately, anybody that I knew that was interested in recording this stuff for me. So I got, you know, we got a subscription to the Sunday Memphis paper, so I could see, you know, what happened at the Mid-South Coliseum, because I didn't even know who was fighting who. And this went on for a while, probably, I don't remember who I found or how I started finding people that were selling stuff, because there was no YouTube back then. There was no presence in the paper. I know that Atlanta, when I moved to Atlanta in 88, they started having a show late at night on Saturdays that would show clips from Memphis. And this is in, like 88, 89. And I would start recording those shows. So I would have pieces of Memphis. And then,
Yeah, that was probably
gosh, I
that
got.
Joe Pettisino This Week in Wrestling that they would do where they would show the different promotions.
Yeah, they had a girl, a blonde lady that was there
Bonnie
too.
Blackstone or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. Yep, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so that was the only thing that I had, but that got me wanting to find more stuff. And I don't remember when the internet finally, the only people that you could find, there was a guy, and I don't remember his name, in Florida that had a website, and it was not Memphis Wrestling. There was it was a bunch of Memphis tapes, or just a lot of wrestling tapes, and he had a few Memphis things, so I would buy from him. I slowly found out about Steve Friedlander, Jeff Lynch, so I bought everything they had. And I found, I came up with this website, 70sTV.com, and then I just, because I'd online, there was literally nobody talking about Memphis wrestling other than me, who threw up, a Memphis wrestling section. And I thought, well, I'll just throw this up, because I put together a 4-disc compilation of Lawler and contacted him through his site and sent it to him. I wanted him to have it, and I was hoping that that would make him want to release his own, because I thought he's got to have all this footage himself. But I just wanted him to know how much, I enjoyed it and how much I was starting to sell this little thing on eBay. More and more people started buying stuff, but like I said, there was really no presence for Memphis wrestling per se on the internet. The only other thing that I found was Mark James had a website, MemphisWrestling.com,
Yeah,
and I
he's
was so
a
I.
well-known kind of historian of Memphis wrestling.
Yeah, and back at that time, there was really just 70s TV with Memphis Wrestling section, and I was selling DVDs, and then there was him, who was finding old clips from the paper and listing things. And I contacted him, and we kind of got to be friends, online, and we talked. And then he got into just the whole thing exploded. So the culture of Memphis wrestling online just really didn't exist. Early 2000s, late 90s.
Yeah.
And I can't believe what we have today. But anyway,
You're still
the
converting new
stories,
fans.
yeah. And the stories I could tell would just go on forever. I mean, outside of the ones that I named, I found so many different people. Somebody would give me somebody's phone number. Somebody would say, this guy's apparently has footage. Some people contacted me. One guy had recorded, I think, 4 or 5 episodes off of his tape player of 1979 Memphis shows with all the commercials intact. And so I paid him for that. That's the other thing to say. They say tape traders. I did trade tapes with David Dixon's fan, but other than that, I paid for just about everything I had. And
I love that 79 stuff so much, so thank you for finding that.
yeah, 79 was a huge year. I think we moved in July, and I, oh man, if I had only at that point had a VHS or VCR recorder, gosh. So I think the
Actually,
earliest,
just
go
as
ahead.
a way to prep for the interview, I was kind of rewatching old stuff from various years, and I was rewatching the episode from 79 where it was Lawler and Dundee against the Freebirds, and they had that great 20-minute match, and then the big angle from the previous week at the Coliseum was that Latham and Ferris and Danny Davis had like poured something in Jackie Fargo's eyes because he had come back with Lawler and Dundee to team with them because Latham and Ferris were so, menacing that they needed to bring back Jackie, and then they had this interview with Jackie laying in bed with like all these things over his face. Do you remember that? The episode I'm
Yeah,
talking
I
about?
remember. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, we might as well, while we're talking, just kind of talk about very briefly my journey and why I'm so obsessed with it. Everyone
Yeah.
knows I've been obsessed with wrestling my whole life. And my favorite thing ever when I was a teenager was ECW. And the reason that I loved ECW was because of its chaotic nature. It was wild, the crazy brawls, the music videos. ECW was like my religion. So And again, I'm just embarrassed that I didn't discover Memphis earlier, but I'm sorry. I apologize, Jerry Jarrett and Lance Russell and Jerry Lawler and everybody involved, because when I found Memphis first on YouTube and I watched the TV show, I'm like, this was ECW 15 years before ECW. This is like the most innovative stuff. I'm watching that 79 TV with the Tupelo concession stand brawl. You know, and it's like, you know, just knowing my taste in wrestling, that I like the chaos, I like the brawling, I like the blood, I like the feuds. I just immediately fell in love with it right away and just made it like one of my life's goals to see every Memphis TV that's ever been produced, which I'm still working on. I've got like 94 through 97 left to watch. And just to kind of illustrate how much I love Memphis wrestling and how much it means to me. And you can see the picture on my Twitter profile. I saw that Lance Russell and Dave Brown were doing an appearance in Memphis at a show that Lawler was wrestling at. And I knew at this point that Lance was like in his early 90s and probably wasn't going to have a ton of appearances left. So I was at my job in Chicago. I left the office at 5 p.m., got to Memphis around 2 in the morning. The next afternoon, I went and met Lawler and Jimmy Valiant at a casino in West Arkansas, which was great that I got to meet those guys and tell them what they meant to me. And then that night, I got to meet Lance Russell and Dave Brown. And I tell you, meeting Lance Russell, like, still to this day, I mean, especially now that Lance is no longer with us, the fact that I got to go tell him what he meant to me and how much I loved him was great. And I hope I can get Dave Brown on this show at some point and talk to him. So then the show ends at 10 p.m. I hop in my car. I drive from Memphis back to Chicago, get to the office at about 6 a.m., sleep on the couch for an hour, and start the workday at 7 a.m. They had a couch in the office. Man. That's how crazy I am about Memphis.
That is dedication. That's amazing.
And you've seen if you go to my my Twitter, it's got the picture of me between Lance Russell and Dave Brown, and then a picture of me standing in front of the Mid-South Coliseum. So I like I put it out there.
I haven't seen the picture. I'll send you the link.
So let's. Go ahead.
Well, I gotta know. You gotta tell me real quick. So how was it? How were Dave and Lance, as you expected from the show, were they real?
110%.
Wow.
Amazing. I think I had sent a message to Lance on Facebook telling him that I was coming from Chicago. So I saw him coming into the building and I like went and grabbed him before anybody else could meet him. I was so excited to meet him. And he's like, oh, yeah, so good to meet you. Dave and I were talking about how we need to drive to Chicago and come meet you and all these things. And it was perfect. They were both so nice. Wow. I've communicated a lot with Dave Brown on Twitter since then, kind of kept in touch a little bit. Absolutely. And that's what everybody says when Lance did unfortunately pass. Everybody said that he was just one of the most well-liked, genuine guys in the industry, and the person that you saw on TV is absolutely who he was in real life.
Wow, good to know. Him, that was such a great combination. Dave Brown, I just always picture him with a smile on his face. You know, it's just, even on the show, he's just always smiling like, I'm happy to be here. Whatever Lance says, I got your back. You know, that's right. That's right, Lance. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
And you can kind of tell the audience about this. One of the many unique things about Memphis wrestling is that Dave Brown was like one of the most respected newsmen in the city doing the news every night, right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That's what gave it more credibility, especially, you know, I'd argue with my parents because my dad would walk through and he'd look at it and he'd get all mad. He would look at one punch that didn't seem to connect and say, see, it's fake. Oh, I ain't watching all that crap. And I'd be like, yeah, but it's not. And then I'd see, you know, Tojo would chop somebody. You'd hear the chop ring out. I'm like, no, he made contact. They're hitting each other. And, you know, but it was like, well, why's Dave Brown doing it? I'm like, he's the weatherman. And Dave Brown, even back in the 70s, he was very good at predicting the weather. I mean, he was right. It seemed like 90% of the time. And I know we didn't have all the equipment we have now to make sure we know what the weather's going to do, but I'm tremendously well respected. And then the other thing was you had Lance and Dave and Jerry Lawler all did these commercials for the little, stores, whatever they were. So that was adding to the whole thing of the respect and how they were such familiar people in our community.
Lance had like a suit sponsorship, right?
Oh, it was so funny. The Baxter suits. Yeah, Jerry Lawler made fun of them all the time, how he was always in the commercials and always wearing those Baxter suits on the show. It was awesome.
So yeah,
Oh, man.
kind of going off that theme of how they had the most respected newsmen in the city doing their color commentary on the pro wrestling show. For people that don't know, Memphis was the highest rated local TV show of any of the territories, like by far. I think
Yeah.
it was Lance Russell's idea to put them on Saturday mornings, and they were doing, I think, numbers were like 7 out of every 10 TVs that were on in the city of Memphis were watching Memphis wrestling at the peak. Like, that's how big of a cultural institution it was in the city.
Yeah. I think Jared did say that this was they were even doing better than most primetime shows. I mean, at night with Sanford and Son and Charlie's Angels, they were pulling more numbers than some of those shows, which is just crazy. But yeah, it was a huge deal.
And it still
Saturday.
is. I'm so amused by the fact that the Grizzlies every year still do a Memphis wrestling night. They had
Oh.
Jerry Lawler wrestle, I think, X-Pac 1 year. I forget who he wrestled the first year. And they had Dave Brown and Lance Russell doing commentary for a Jerry Lawler match at halftime of a Memphis Grizzlies game in front of 20,000 people. And they still
Wow.
do that. Lawler still has his restaurant on Beale Street that I think, must be doing well since it's been around for a couple years now.
Yeah.
So yeah, and one thing we should mention while we're talking about Memphis is just sending out our best wishes to Jerry Lawler. I mentioned to you that he has this crazy story that he told on his podcast last week where he had a stroke. And the doctors were saying maybe he'll talk again in 6 months, maybe a year, maybe never. And then 3 days later, he returned to perfect health and was just perfectly fine. And 3 weeks later, he hosted the WWE Hall of Fame, which was like a 4.5 hour show. And then he announced a match at WrestleMania. So, thank you to whatever religion you just subscribe to or whatever. Jerry Lawler pulled the strap down one more time in real life.
Yeah. He's been amazingly fortunate. I cannot believe he's come back from both of these things unscathed. He seems to be fine and normal. And wow, I hope he's around for quite a few more years. Wow.
So let's talk about, actually, let's talk a little bit about some of these DVDs that you have on your site here. You have those TV masters that you purchase, like the master tapes, the actual master tapes of Memphis wrestling TV shows that are the better quality than you can find anywhere. Tell the
Yeah.
audience a little bit about how you got those and why those are so cool.
Well, I had a like I started getting, attention and contact from a lot of different people and some people that had wrestled in at Memphis in the 70s and 80s and were looking for footage of themselves, and I helped a lot of them out. I, talked to a lot of people I was surprised I heard from. And also, I did license some of my footage to the documentary a few years ago. They found me out, and I licensed some of that. But
Oh, the WWE one?
no,
Oh, the
the
Memphis
Memphis
Heat.
wrestling, yeah,
Okay.
history. When did that documentary come out? It's been quite a while. But a guy named Jeff Osborne emailed me through the website, and he said I have U-Matic Masters. He said that he and a friend of his pooled their money and went to some, I don't know if it was in Tennessee or not, and I don't remember who the wrestler was, but it had been rumored that he had master tapes and he was interested for the right amount selling them to some people. And so they had pooled their money and they said, we're going to go get him this time. They had a couple $1,000s. I think he told me it was 6 or 7,000. I think he had like 18 master tapes from the actual shows. I mean, these are the broadcast masters. This is what they showed on television. And they went out, to his car and gave him the money and got all the master tapes that he had. And so Jeff Osborne has contacted me years later saying he has these, and I've never heard of U-Matic Master. I don't know what he's talking about. But he kind of popped up and kind of played with me and said he had them. And I said, well, would you be interested in selling them? And he said, I don't know. I hadn't looked at them in years. So he went away, and I said, well, what was that little teaser about? So a year later, he pops up again and said, hey, this is Jeff, and I got these Masters. And I said, oh, well, do you want to sell them? I'd be interested in selling them. I'm thinking this guy's probably, you know, just shooting the breeze. He doesn't have any tapes. I thought, how is this guy going to have a master tape from the TV show? So anyway, it kept going, and we kept talking, and I was getting frustrated with him, but I finally made him an offer, and he said he would sell me one of them. And I got one, was blown away, not only that it looked better than what we saw on our TV back then, of course, but it looked like it was filmed yesterday. Everything was so vibrant, and the audio was amazing. And so I bought everything that he had. And then slowly there was all the extra expense of going to a place to have them professionally transferred to DVD. And then I would take them at home and try to clean them up even more. And then I would, you know, did all the artwork for all the DVDs that I sell on Memphis. But yeah, this stuff, Jarrett was right. Not only was you'd get a full show, and a show probably you'd never seen before in its entirety, but you'd also get, like he said, they recorded over these tapes. So at the end of the tape, I'd keep watching, and most of the time, another show at the end of, you know, would come up, and I'd be like, "Whoa, what is this?" Like there was some other little pieces of things that I found, and I wish that. I wish those tapes had not been recorded over, but it was just great to get little pieces of things that we never would have seen otherwise. So yeah, getting to see the master tapes was amazing. I've got quite a few, and not to mention the Leduc thing where he's cutting his arm open, which is, you know, uncut, uncensored, how it went out originally on the air. Just amazing stuff.
And then another one that I really enjoyed on your site is somehow you have some clips of studio wrestling from before 79. So you have kind of a best of Memphis studio wrestling from the 70s. That was another thing that you found.
I started out doing it that way. I wish I could remember where I found most of this stuff. It was people that I bought and sent money orders to, and would have to wait and wait. And a lot of these were a one-off that I don't even have the information to these people anymore. But yeah, I continued to find some great 70s stuff. It looked like 76, 77. Rocky Johnson, the Paul Orndorff stuff, which was, I wish I had that, those entire shows, which goes back into, you know, what we went through with the other guy in Arkansas who apparently got into Lawler's storage space,
Well,
and he's trying to,
for the audience that doesn't know, yeah, we came across, you could tell the story, I guess, if you want to.
Oh, no, you tell it. Go ahead.
Well, okay, so we're not done finding Memphis stuff. Like,
No.
I'm not until the day I die. I swear I want every WMC5 complete Memphis episode from 72 to 97. So, I actually reached out to Rick first just to thank him for all the great stuff he was doing, and then I was asking if I could help him out at all. I put out a Craigslist ad in the Memphis area, seeing if anybody had any old Memphis tapes. And yeah, I guess we'll just put it out there. Some guy found something in somebody's old storage unit, some old tapes from like 78. And it was really cool looking, but the guy wants like $10,000, I think, when you talk to him. So, we love Memphis, but 10,000 is a little high. So we're gonna wait a little bit and see if we can negotiate that price down a little bit. But yeah, like you and I are not done, just as a teaser to the fans of finding Memphis footage. You know, we spent a couple $100 just to find a couple new TV shows from the early 80s. And I think you said to me, like, oh, I felt bad that you spent that much money only to get three new TV shows. And I'm like, no, That's awesome. Three brand new TV Memphis studio episodes with Lance Russell and Jimmy Hart and Jerry Lawler. Like, that's totally worth the money. I just consider this stuff like I'm Indiana Jones chasing down the Ark of the Covenant. It's just I'm addicted to it. I love it. I love it so much. And that's the frustrating thing. I guess we can get into this a little bit, is that Memphis basically had two shows. So they had the live show that they did every Saturday morning that was promoting the next Monday night's Mid-South Coliseum card. But then they would also edit it down to a 60-minute show and send that out to the other cities they ran every week, like Evansville and Nashville and Louisville. And for a lot of the footage we have, we only have that 60-minute show that's missing, like, really cool angles and the big matches that were only happening in Memphis. Doesn't that just bug you like it bugs me?
Well, I get more and more respect for what was going on at that time, because it still boggles my mind. I don't know how many versions of the 90-minute Memphis show were done, because I know every town, they were, you know, like, what, a week behind or something, so they were trying to redo the angle or even change it in some cities just slightly, and so they couldn't show. I mean, I cannot believe how many edits they had to do of the 90-minute shows and send it to all the different, you know, states or cities. And I thought these guys were just on TV Saturday morning, they do the Monday night matches, and then they just had the rest of the week to kind of relax, even though I heard they go to some towns in Arkansas, Mississippi and stuff, but I can't believe how busy these guys were. Even the thing when Dundee got his head shaved, I didn't know until his book, thinking about that, well, how did they redo a match like that? Well, apparently Dundee was wearing a wig after the different towns, and they have to pretend like they were shaving his wig, you know, his hair.
Oh, that's a great story.
Gosh, it's crazy, man. These guys, yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately, it was so hard to get some of the Memphis 90-minute live feed. So, yeah, a lot of my tapes they're from Louisville feed and just different cities, different states. And you get what you can, and they had to do these little backstage interviews to try to fill in what they didn't have in the 90-minute feed.
I mean, on one hand, we're blessed because we, you know, what we have from like 79, you know, through 84 is a lot more than you get from a lot of territories. But gosh, there's still a part of me, if we had every actual WMC5 Memphis show, it would just be the greatest binge watching episodic TV of all time. Because I've been watching, I was going back and watching your 84 set, and it's just, you know, so much fun how, you know, one week it's Jerry Lawler against Rick Rude, with the loser getting 10 lashes to the back. And of course, Rick Rude didn't follow the directions and lash Lawler a million times. So then the next week it's the lash on a pole, you know, and who's gonna get the lash and whip the opponent. And they did just that great week-to-week storytelling, because every Monday night they were running an 11,000-seat arena. So every Saturday morning they had to do a big show to hype that up. Like, basically every week was both your go-home show for a pay-per-view and your show the night, your Raw the night after a pay-per-view, which is why I think the TV show is so special. There was just so much going on because they were running so frequently.
Yeah. I think you're right, and it is. You get an appreciation for it if you do watch it in order every week, because all the stuff that just kept going, the storylines kept, you know, all this winding road of these stories. And, yeah, if you just watch one episode, you don't get the full appreciation for it. You have to kind of see the week after week.
Yeah, which is why, again, I recommend and I love your season sets that are available at 70stv.com. Again, that's 70s-tv.com. Nobody has more complete stuff than you have, especially like that 82 through 84 glory period of Memphis. You went through and combined things from multiple, as you mentioned, just multiple tapes. I know you've mentioned to me that, like, you would pay attention to what tie Lance Russell was wearing so that you could, like, piece together the episodes and put these DVD season sets together and give us the most complete experience that we're able to have as what it was like living in Memphis at the time.
You said that perfectly, Sean. That is very true. Something like the 84 set, it took 3 or 4 months to finish it because all these different tapes I would have, they'd have like 11 minutes of a show. Another guy would have, 5 minutes. Then there'd be like 18 minutes of this part. Yeah, I was going through looking at Lance Russell's tie and his jacket to identify, is this the same show? And then thank goodness Mark James had put out this whole thing to let you know what date happened at the Mid-South Coliseum. So I backtracked 2 days to Saturday and say, okay, this was a Saturday show, so it had to have been July 11th. And yeah, I would try to cut this together so it would be as complete and be as close as it could be to what was originally aired in Memphis. So yeah, that you get the best thing you can possibly imagine because I spent so much time on it. I don't know why, other than that I'm so passionate about it. My friends would say, what are you doing? I got to get it right.
I have that same passion, and that's why we're friends, and that's why I reached out to you, and thank you for doing it. And I love those sets so much, and we're not done yet. We're going to keep finding new stuff. and let's talk about, since we're being open here, Jim Cornette. Gosh darn it. We know that Jim Cornette has the full Louisville feed from 82 to 84 that would plug in so many gaps. But, maybe because he doesn't want to make Jerry Lawler angry, there's the issue of Jerry Lawler. He's always talking about how he's going to sell the Memphis Library to WWE. We haven't been able to see that stuff, but gosh darn it, we need to see that stuff before we die.
I don't quite understand that. It has to be what you just said. It has to be that Jerry Lawler would not appreciate him releasing that to make money off of it, even though so much of it's out on YouTube, which I could.
Let's just spend about 15 minutes here, just kind of briefly just marking out over our favorite Memphis stuff, shooting the breeze. We've talked about Lawler. We've talked about, Lance Russell was, in my opinion, Lance Russell deserves to be mentioned in the same breath as people like Vin Scully and Keith Jackson as just one of the great American broadcasters of all time. It's kind of a shame that only that section of the country got to see him, although he gained so many fans over the years through tape trading and your sets and the internet and whatnot. But I genuinely believe Lance Russell is one of the greatest broadcasters that has ever been in this country that we have footage of.
Wow. I would agree with you. I that's awesome to hear that you feel that way and that he's getting the recognition,
And Dave Brown, the perfect sidekick.
Yeah. I watched, I think, something recently. It may have been even at his at Lance Russell's funeral that did in Memphis where Dave was talking about their relationship. And he said how early on Lance said, no pressure. Just you don't even have to talk if you don't want to in the beginning. He said, take it at your own pace. Don't feel any pressure. And it worked so well. Lance was so good. You could watch him at moments in the show where it would be, this is one of the things I would want to know. I think you and I had wanted to know how much of the storylines did Lance know was going to happen? Was he in on the whole thing or were there at times where he wasn't sure what's going to happen or did any of the storylines deviate live from what they were supposed to be?
I really want to have Dave Brown on this show and get the details. Yeah. That's one of my goals.
Because Lance, I don't know if he was just so good at pretending to be, shocked. But there were times where he looked like, I'm not sure what to do. And it was so great. He'd look at Dave sometimes and go, well, we got to get stuff back together here. I'm not sure where we are in the show. And Dave would look either disgusted if that's what Lance looked like, or he'd smile and he'd say, yeah, we gotta figure out what's going on. But he was so good.
And we have to give credit to the brains of the entire operation. ECW had Paul Heyman as its evil creative genius. And Jerry Jarrett, you know, was the genius of his time. And I don't think those two guys like each other, so they probably wouldn't like the comparison. But Jerry Jarrett really was like just a creative genius in the way that, you know, just the TV show was so far ahead of its time in terms of how action-packed and angle-filled it was. The ability that he had to come up with a new main event every week for the Coliseum, like I mentioned, we just got to give Jerry Jarrett credit. Tremendous mind. Just what a job he did back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, that's, he got the whole thing, which is essential. Whenever you're trying to get an audience, you're trying to gather people's interest, whether it's you're a songwriter or a singer, you're doing a TV show. He said in one of the interviews, he would make sure to watch when they had an angle planned, and he was so good at rolling this thing out over the next few weeks. He said, I could tell when it wasn't selling. He said, no, we changed it immediately. We switched it up. You know, like they tried Rick Rude as a good guy for a little short amount of time, and the people just weren't buying it. So they switched him back, I think, 2 or 3 weeks after. I mean,
kind of like the new Fabulous ones, right? That didn't really work, so they split them up.
Yeah, I know. But that was part of his, as well as the subtlety and knowing how to tell a story that people could believe. The whole suspend disbelief thing is awesome, because that's what he did for me as a kid. And even when I watch it now, and I'm an old man, I watch it and I'm still like, this is still entertaining. I can still see it holds my attention. I mean, yeah, he was way ahead of his time. He got the whole thing.
Now, here's an interesting figure that maybe you got to see more of than I've been able to. Whenever they would bring back Jackie Fargo and get him involved with like a feud or something, he just seemed like the coolest, most likable babyface of all time. And he was like the original guy that they built the territory around before Jerry Lawler. He was selling out the Mid-South Coliseum, you know, in the early 70s. It was a huge star and a huge part in making Jerry Lawler what he was. And I always loved whenever they would bring him back and he'd cut a great promo from his house, and he just seemed like the coolest guy. Did you get to see much of him when you were a kid that we didn't get to see?
Well, see, I'm still trying to think if I came in at 75 or 76, but I thought Jackie Fargo was like gone. My only memories are basically seeing what you're seeing, is that they would bring him back, and I didn't know much about him other than what I would hear them say. So I didn't really see him in the heyday when he was the top guy and everything. He was kind of retired when I started watching it.
Ah, gosh, but, I wish we had footage of the days of him and Lance. I mean, that could have been like I mean, that could have been just as good, and we're never going to be able to see it because the tapes just don't exist. Let's talk about Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart. Oh my gosh. I wouldn't necessarily say he's the best manager of all time, but I would say he had the best run of any manager of all time, because what he did from 19, well, they brought him in late 79 as Lawler's manager, and then Lawler gets hurt, and he cuts the famous promo about how when a horse gets hurt, you shoot it, and that starts the program that carries the territory for 4 years. So Jimmy Hart cutting that promo, like, really saved them. We can go into more detail maybe in a future time when we're here, but, you know, Lawler getting hurt was a disaster and they had to save the territory. And what he did every week, he got beat up so much when they would show the footage from the Mid-South Coliseum. It wasn't like this thing where they would spend months building up to him getting beat up. He would get his butt kicked, but then every week on TV, he would get his heat back because he was so good on the mic and so good at irritating people that, you know, he'd make them buy a ticket to see him get his butt kicked again. And every day was the greatest day of his life.
Yeah, there's one clip from 83 where he comes out and I actually see Lance trying to hide that he's laughing. Because Jimmy comes out one time talking about Eddie Marlin had been on mic, and he said, everybody's falling asleep back there. And he said, he's putting us to sleep. And then violins, violins. And Yeah, he was incredibly annoying, and it was funny to watch Lance and him with their interplay. Man.
Yeah, him and Lawler was just one of the great feuds in wrestling history. It carried the territory when they were doing huge business. Another guy who I want to mention who doesn't get enough credit, who I think was just the perfect number two in Memphis and was so good as either a face or a heel, as a tag team guy, as a single, brawls, technical matches, promos, superstar Bill Dundee. Bill Dundee was awesome, and not enough people know it. He never got opportunities outside of Memphis that he deserved because of his size. Talk to me a little bit about the greatness of kind of Jerry Lawler's Robin to his Batman superstar Bill Dundee.
He did. I mean, and I, you know, I'm he was a good looking guy. He had the cool black hair in the 70s. He looked uncomfortable on the microphone, but I think that somehow played into how good Lawler was at cutting him down when they were against each other. He fit in so
That
perfectly.
sawed off front.
And he when they were a tag team, it just was perfection. Lawler did most of the talking. Dundee would kind of repeat what Jerry had said. But in the ring, that was the biggest thing about Dundee. They were Lawler and Dundee as a tag team was amazing. They just seemed to know each other's moves. Their timing was amazing. I would be interested to know, did they rehearse all this? Did they talk about how we're going to end a match or something, or did it just happen? And them is legendary against each other in their feuds. I mean, and I still, Jerry Jarrett's the one that says a lot of the time those guys didn't pull their punches. He says that there was a legit jealousy between the two of them,
Well,
and
I
it would
think Bill
come out and
Dundee thought he should be Jerry Lawler, with his opinion of himself from everything I've ever seen.
And you Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee today are too political with their responses about each other. I'm like, no, but Jerry, because Jerry says there was more to that. That's why it came across as realism, because it was real. There was some issues there. And he said they didn't quite like each other. They didn't hang out with each other. There was a dislike. And like I said, I think Lawler got jealous of Dundee sometimes too, because Bill was popular. He had a lot of girls and a lot of people that really liked him and were pulling for him.
And there were several different iterations of the feud that were all successful. There was the original one in the late 70s that unfortunately we don't have footage of, where it Bill Dundee's wife got her head shaved. Then they revisited it back in 83, and they have that famous TV show that's on one of your DVDs that is it's a, the entire Memphis TV show was like them at a desk together with Lance Russell moderating, and I think Lawler did a squash match and Dundee did a squash match, and they showed clips of their matches together and music videos, and the entire thing is just those two guys and Lance Russell, cutting promos on each other, building up to a loser leave town match Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum. And then for the rest of the markets, like we were talking about, that got a different show, they redid it, but they redid it at Jerry Jarrett's house.
Well, that is my most prized possession of the master tapes. That thing is absolutely gorgeous, and it's the entire show. Looked like it was filmed yesterday. I don't know. Yeah, it like you said, it had to have been for different markets. I almost enjoyed that one better. They still showed clips, but the interplay between Lawler and Dundee was, I thought, better than the show on the Memphis feed. But oh man, that is just awesome. And it was a great match too that they did that Monday night
One
that
of my
we all
favorite
have.
matches of all time. I love that
Oh my
match.
gosh. There's also that the 85 thing. Have you seen the 85
Well, that's what I was
Loserleaf
gonna bring
Town?
up next, is the big feud when their match in 85 with Lawler. I think something happened to his eye earlier in the show, so the whole thing is Dundee just punching him in the face in that side, and they made it totally compelling. And then Dundee had one of my favorite runs of all time as like this tyrant heel in Memphis who was bloodying up all the jobbers. He slapped Lance Russell. He was like the biggest bully ever. And then There's the famous angle where he went after Jerry Jarrett's eye, and they were saying that he was going to blind him, and they had to bring Jerry Lawler back because he had lost a Loser Leaf Town match to Bill Dundee, and that was the last sellout ever at the Mid-South Coliseum, was Lawler making his return teaming with Dutch Mantel against Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell. Yeah, that stuff was awesome.
Do you remember, well, I know you do, but they had had Jeff Jarrett, Jerry's son, being the ref that week.
Yeah.
And Landell slaps him in the face, and Dundee, they start beating on him or something. And poor, you know, Jerry Jarrett, who's already announced, I can't wrestle anymore because of my retina detaching, so I can't go in the ring with my eye. So he comes up to try to defend his son. They beat up Jerry Jarrett. But I mean, one of the best performances from Jerry Jarrett is when he comes back after the commercial break. Do you remember this? Jerry Jarrett's actually crying.
Yes, absolutely. It's like one of the greatest episodes of Memphis ever.
He's got the towel, and Lance is feeling bad for him. He's like, oh, it's okay. Jerry, just go backstage. I understand. It'll be okay. And it's like, oh, my gosh. I mean, totally wraps you up. You're like, what is going on here? Dundee and Landell are just crazy. And there comes Eddie Marlin. We got to call Jerry Lawler. And they get on the phone, live TV. They're halfway backstage trying to find a phone. This is amazing. Oh, my gosh.
I'm telling you, any listeners here who haven't watched Memphis TV, get these DVDs because it's like, you know, binge watching Breaking Bad or The Shield or something. It's just like the greatest stuff. We've already talked for an hour. We haven't even gotten into Lawler against Idol and Rich. We haven't talked about Lawler and Bockwinkle. We haven't talked about the empty arena match. We haven't mentioned Andy Kaufman's name. We haven't talked about Randy Savage and the promotional war and him coming in and doing the feud. We haven't talked about them creating Kamala, the Fabulous Ones, the Rock and Roll Express, Jim Cornette. There's a million other things that we got to talk about. So you are definitely someone that we are going to have again, you know, guesting with us in the future. Thank you so much for doing the show. You know how much of a fan I am of what you've done with these Memphis DVDs and how great they are. So why don't you give one last plug for everybody out there?
Yeah, just we didn't get to also. More footage has been found by me from Jeff Osborne. I didn't realize I had sitting around. There's more 79 footage to come. I'm redoing the set, adding some audio that I recorded in 1979 that's never been heard anywhere, unless you saw the show originally in 1979. Yeah, the DVDs are there. I try to get them out pretty quick. There's artwork. They come in cases. It's the best presentation you'll find of this Memphis footage. I tried to give it all the respect that it deserves and make sure everybody can enjoy it. Other than that, thank you, Sean, for having me on. I appreciate all the conversation we had and talking about these stories and you helping me plug the site. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you so much. And I think Lance Russell would approve of this. I really want to do this once in my life and just end the podcast by saying, for Rick Crane, this is Sean Reedy saying bye-bye, everybody.